be with you all this afternoon, this evening. And I divided my presentation into four different parts. And then after each part, we are going to have like a small time of questions and answers. So I divided into four parts. The first one, I'm going to talk a little bit about the church in Latin America, in general, how the church has grown, not only in Latin America, but how the world, the Christianity is changing from the global north to the global south. So the, how the world is changing, how the church is growing in South America, in Africa, and Asia. So that's going to be the first part. The second part, I'm going to talk about the church, specifically in Peru, how the church has grown over the last 30 years, the needs of the church in Peru, the strengths of the church in Peru, and the weakness of the church in Peru. Then, in the third part, I'm going to talk about theological education, because that's what, God's willing, I'm going to be orientated in the future. Theological education, especially in the context of Peru and Latin America. And then, in the fourth part of my presentation, I'm going to talk a little bit about what I would like to do in the context of Latin American theological education and some projects, immediate projects for the next 18 months and some like a longer project for the next 5 or 10 years. So that's basically tonight the presentation. So I have pointed out it's a changes in the world. The vast majority of Christians now live in South America, Asia, and Africa, as you know. Could anyone point out a percentage? What is the percentage of Christians living now in the global south? I mean in a combination between South America, Africa, and Asia. Does anyone want to guess a percentage? 70, that's quite good, quite accurate. Have you been looking on the internet? 70, anyone more, less? 75, okay. You know, have you... Well, it's 75%. Have you seen the... 75% of Christians now living the combination between Africa, Asia, and South America. So the resource is the Gospel Coalition. I took all the statistics in this part from the Gospel Coalition. So that's a lot. 75% of Christians live in these areas. So if you take a Christian, and if we have here an average Christian in the world, how he will look like? He will look probably like me, perhaps, or like a Chinese, or a mix between both. So the typical standard of white American or English as the average Christian is not anymore, it's a minority. So as I pointed out, 85% of the 2.2 million of evangelical churches worldwide are led by pastors with no theological training. 85% of them haven't had theological training. Have you read a Christian book over the last 3 months? Could you raise your hand if you have read a Christian book over the last 3 months? The majority of us. Now imagine that over the years that you have been a Christian, you have never had the access of Christian books. Only the Bible, in some languages, even only a few verses in the Bible. Now imagine now that you are a pastor and you have on your shoulders the responsibility of training people in your congregation. That's a huge task if you don't have the theological training, if you don't have the book and the resources. That's a difficult thing to do. So because there is such a big number of Christians, the new generation of theologians, leaders, and missionaries could come from these countries. Actually, if you look, for example, the new generation of theologians, the surnames are changing quite a bit. I think, Ben, you were reading a book on Philippians. Who was the author?
Silva.
Moisés Silva. It doesn't sound very English, isn't it? Moisés Silva, actually, his first tongue is Spanish. And I met him in Peru, so he's South American. So actually, when you have a look at the new theologians, this new generation of preachers are coming from this flock because of the huge number. And that seems to be the future of the church over the next 10, 20 years. 33% of the world's population are actively using the internet. And that is a huge advantage. I mean, how to train all these pastors, how to get all these resources. The internet is a great tool. I was in the Amazon, down to the Amazon on July last year. And we went, I mean, in a completely outside the world. I mean, we were probably 4 hours from the city in Iquitos, which is 3 hours by plane from Lima, the capital of Peru. It will take you around 2 days from London to get there. And the guy that was driving the boat were discussing with the other guy the results between the game between Manchester United and Barcelona, and they were watching there on the internet. So unbelievable! You can get to pretty much everywhere in the world through the internet. Now we have told there is a huge number of Christians in this south area of the world. But what about the maturity of the church? What about the number of missionaries that are sent by these areas? So, missionaries from the northern and southern blocks. When I say southern blocks, I mean South America, Asia, and Africa. So can you see 1988, 1990, 1995, and 2000? So by the year 2000, there are more missionaries that have been sent from the global south than from the north. And from 2010, the number is a lot higher, and the missionaries from the north is a lot slower. For example, countries like, can you hear, I mean, one of the churches, among the two churches that has grown more over the last 10 years is the church in Cuba and the church in Iran. So the church in Iran is now, by 2013, April, around of 1%, which is quite amazing. I mean, a country that had 20 years ago almost 0% of evangelicals to 1% is quite remarkable over the last 20 years. But as you all know, I mean, if you are from the U.S., it's quite difficult to get to these countries. But not if you are from South America or if you are from Africa. So a lot of missionaries that are entering today 1040 window, this area, quite difficult, are coming from this side of the world. And the huge majority of missionaries are going to these areas. So actually, the gospel is growing a lot in these areas, but have to be with it's because of partnership between churches in the West, but also a huge, huge number of missionaries from the South. The evangelical church in Latin America has been growing rapidly. Some scholars claim that there are more than 80 million evangelicals. That's quite a bit. I mean, if you think the number of the church in the UK, some people say that it's around of 700,000 to 1 million, perhaps 1.5 million in the UK. So that's quite remarkable. It is believed that 75% that statistic is all the Christians will be in the southern block. Actually, it was a lot before than 2025. However, missions from Latin America are still in an early stage. This is the number of missionaries, transcultural missionaries, 8,748. That statistic is half around of 10 years ago. From Latin America, just 1.01% of the total of believers. Latin America has the lowest percentage of missionaries two believers in the whole world in comparison to South Korea, which sent more than 10,000 missionaries. There are around of just 0.1% of the total of evangelicals. So although it's a big church, and now I'm talking only about Latin America, I'm not talking now about Africa or Asia, although in Latin America it's a big church, the percentage of missionaries that we send is still quite slow. So there are different ways to measure the maturity of a church. You can measure the maturity of a church by the number of the church. You can measure the maturity of the church by the theologians or the masters and preachers that the such country produce. But I think that an accurate way to measure is by the number of missionaries that specific country is sending. So just an example, the UK, could anyone guess what is the number of missionaries that the UK send to the world? Roughly? A bit higher. It's quite... 6,800, the number of missionaries. That is quite good. It's almost 1% of the church. I mean, if you take into account that for every 100 truly believers in England, one of them is involved in missions, that's quite high and quite remarkable. But the percentage is a lot lower in Latin America. And there are several reasons for that that I'm going to explain in a few minutes. This is the last bit. This is the end. Next one is about the church in Peru. So does anyone have questions about... I'm going really... the evangelical church in Peru. The gospel arrived in Peru around of 120 years ago. The first person to preach the gospel was a guy called Pensotti. Before 1880, there were quite a few number of missionaries from the U.S., England, in the 17th century, the Moravians, but they were only working with American communities or German communities, but they didn't actually preach the gospel openly because it was forbidden by the Catholic Church. So there were a few missionaries before already. I already said that. The evangelical church in Peru has grown rapidly over the last 40 years. In 1972, just 2.5% of the population in Peru considered themselves as evangelicals, Christians. 1972, that's the official number of the census. One of the reasons is because it was forbidden to preach the gospel until the Second Vatican Concilium. And then, after the Second Vatican Concilium, people were allowed to preach the gospel. This is a picture. Me in the Amazon. It was 3 years ago. This is a beautiful sunset, just to give you an idea about how is the Amazon. It's lovely. I was listening to some music there, and just to give you a flavor of the country and how difficult it is to mobilize in the Amazon, in the jungle. The last census, this is 2007, gave an amazing percentage, 13.6. That's 3,838,023. The evangelical church in Peru has grown 1,100% over the last 40 years. The situation is similar in several countries in Latin America, let's say Cuba, Guatemala, Colombia, etc. So that's a huge number, 13.6. If you consult, for example, the CAA Factbook book, it will say 11.6%, but it's still quite high, between 11.6 and 13.6. Some people say 12. It's difficult to say, but around of 12% is still quite good for 40 years. But one of the implications is that there is a huge need for training pastors and leaders. This is, again, the percentage and how the church has grown over the last 40 years, from 1970 to 2010, is the year, and beside is the percentage. The percentage is based on the national census of Peru, so is that is the official number. Can you see, 1972, it was 2.5%. 1981 was 4.7%, 1993 was 7.2%, and 2007 is 13.6%. So the number is getting higher and higher and higher. Also, because Peru is a quite young country, so the average person in Peru, the average age is 26 year old. So we are quite a young country. I will be an elder in my church, and I'm 28. So because the church has grown a lot, around 4 million of believers. If we say that there are 4 million of believers, if we say that 1% are pastors, there is a need for training for 40,000 pastors. That's quite a huge number, only in Peru. This is a similar chart. It's pretty much the same, but it's just based in numbers. So I pointed out some factors of growing of the church in Peru. This is subjective. This is my understanding, so I couldn't have a kind of proof without sources or statistics, but it's like along the years of study, I have come across this. One is perhaps, I think, is persecution. Peru has had a civil war lasting 12 years, from 1979 to 1992. The Shining Path was a big civil war between people in the Andes and then in the cities, especially in Peru. It is believed that around 2,200 evangelical leaders were killed during this time. So I still have memories when I was probably 8 or 7 years old. I remember praying with my auntie with a candle because the Shining Path, the terrorists has put bombs and the electricity was completely cutting off. And my uncle, I remember him going to the Andes in a mission trip to preach the gospel. And I remember with my auntie holding my hand saying, my little son, let's pray for the Lord for your uncle. My little son, let's pray to the Lord for your uncle. And at 7 or 8 years old, I didn't understand very well what was happening. But it was later when I came understanding that actually what was happening there in the middle of persecution, it was common that some terrorists sometimes enter to the churches and they say, who is a truly Christian here? And people used to stand up and say, we are truly Christian. And they were putting outside the church in a column, in a road. And they were just killed. And year after year, I remember 7 year old. When you are 7, 8, you don't understand very well. But the pastor saying, this has happened in the church in Ayacucho. This has happened in Chuchi. This has happened in different places. Still, the old people have these memories quite here in their mind. A lot of stuff. I mean, there is no movies about this. There is no film about this. People is completely forgotten. We are not Americans. Completely just dying there with no name, just a number. But their names are written in the Book of Life. So I think that is one of the reasons. The other one is what? One of the consequences, obviously, of the civil war is poverty. During the 80s and 90s, Peru suffered intensive poverty, violence, and industrial migrations. My city, Lima, which is the capital of Peru, it has been made by immigrants. Only 3% of people in my city are 3 generations from Lima. 97% of them, over the 1 or 2 generations, has come from the Andes or the jungle. So, because of the poverty, because the Peru, not only Peru, but generally South America, was an oligarchy. Basically, the rich people were in control of the country, and they only care for their own city, which was the capital. So the jungle and the Andes were completely abandoned. So this generate industrial migrations from the rural areas to the cities, and this caused that the poor people are surrounding the cities. This is pretty much, if you have been to Brazil, the favelas surrounding Rio de Janeiro, something similar in Lima, shanty towns surrounding the main cities in Santiago de Chile, Buenos Aires, Lima, etc. So poverty caused people going to the Lord, and this caused growing in the church. Missions, obviously. A lot of missionaries from, let's say, Europe, UK, were sent to Peru from 1950 to 1980. That's have been really good, receiving a lot of missionaries. I mean, probably my whole life until 8 years ago, in all the churches I have been, it was a missionary there. Just until 8 years ago, all my pastors have been Americans, all of them, since I was a child. And that is country sending missionaries to my country. And we know God's sovereignty. Everything is God's hands. So I'm going to talk about the weakness and the strength of the church in Peru before questions. Well, I would say there are different ways to measure the size of maturity of a church. One of them is missionaries. Just 2% of that 80,000 missionaries that Latin Americans send are Peruvians. That's quite low. This is a percentage of the numbers of believers compared to the number of missionaries. The main denomination in Peru is Pentecostals, with 65%. Traditional denominations like Lutheran, Methodist, are less than 2%, so there is almost no presence of Lutherans and Methodists. This statistic is from early 90s, 1992, so it's not completely accurate, but it still gives you an idea of what was happening. The Congress in Caxambu, Brazil, in early 90s, gave these shocking statistics. 75% of the transcultural missionaries from South America have returned home during the first 2 years of active service, and 71% of them did that because of avoidable causes. So, lot of missionaries, but lot of them come back over the immediate 2 years. Most of them because problems in the field, lack of economic support, lack of training, etc. So it's a quite emotional church. We are quite good emotional going there, but not very. We lack training. So this is a chart of theological education in Peru. BA, 3-4 years, is around 14%. Diploma is 1 year, 2 years, generally less than 1 year, and no preparation. So if you have that into account, it's only 14% of people in the country that have pretty much a theological training, a BA. So factors of weakness before. Weakness of the church in Peru. I have pointed out one is paternalism on the pioneer missions, Rice Christians. What paternalism and Rice Christians? Give you an idea. I went to a church in Ayacucho, Pausa. Mission trip after mission trip from an ex-country were to this place, and I was learning now how to read English. So I look on the statistics, and they say that in that town, there were around of 1,050 believers in that town. That's quite high. I mean, having into account that that town was around of 2,000 people. When I visited that town 6 years ago, and I went to the church, there were only 7 people in the church. So the question was, where are the other 993 believers that was in the decision? And I think one of the reasons is that mission trip after mission trip were to these places. They speak Quechua. The people that coming from the mission trip speak English with a translator preaching the gospel to people that perhaps have never know anything about the gospel. They only knew that people were coming and giving food, medicine, and clothes. So they came to church, they filled a cart, and now great revival. Thousands of conversions, which is not true. And that is one example, but I have the opportunity to travel almost for 10 years to almost all the Andes and Amazon, and I have seen the same pretty much in different areas. So there is true that the church has grown a lot, but perhaps not as much as we think. And I don't know how it's in Africa or Asia, but I'm not sure if it's completely different than the situation in South America. So that's one factor of weakness. The other one is decisionism, church growing movement. Over the last 10 or 15 years, especially church growing, seeking friendly, a diluted gospel has entered in the churches. So it's more like a filling a cart rather than a commitment. So the nominalism is growing a lot. Inadequate gospel contextualization. People, especially in the Andes and jungle, the gospel is a syncretism between their own tribal belief and their belief in Jesus. Pretty much the same that happened with the Catholic Church 100 years ago has happened with the Evangelical Church in their understanding about what is the gospel. Denominational separatism, so each denomination is working with their own kingdom, trying to build the church by their own side, but they don't work together for minor divisions. Evangelism center in working classes. What I have written down that as a weakness, perhaps some of you are familiar with the Lausanne movement. The first Lausanne Congress was in 1910 in Edinburgh, and one of the conclusions arriving the Congress in 1910 in Edinburgh was sending missionaries to areas that haven't been reached before, especially poor areas. So in the early 40s and 50s and 60s, a lot of missionaries went to poor areas in South America, working with the lowest and lowest class. So after the first or second generation, because they were working with people that have almost zero education, some of them not even primary school, for them was difficult to take positions of leadership and to evangelize middle and high class, because we still have this prejudicing of aristocracy. So if you don't belong, you are different than me, you come from a lower education, I will not listen to you. So with the years, after two generations, this has been a problem, that there are not many leaders capable, and we have failed to reach middle and high classes. Well, prosperity gospel, I don't have to explain that, and poor theological preparation. Questions, please, about the church in Peru. Possibilities, and then what I would like to do in this context. Because of the number, basically, reaching out countries which have been traditional close to the gospel is a huge opportunity. For example, I mentioned Cuba and Iran among the countries in which the church has grown more over the last 10 years, and that is because missionaries send them from these cultures like South America, Asia, and Africa. Reaching countries which are close for traditional Western missionaries like India, Russia, I don't need a visa for going to the BRIC countries. Brazil, Russia, India, China. But most of you will need a visa. So I just need to take a plane and go into Russia, because we have one-to-one covenant agreement with these countries. So it's a huge advantage in comparison with white Western people. Just go there, I look. Sometimes people say, where are you from? Where do you guess? People have guessed everything. Philippines? No. Mexican? No. Algerian? No. Arab? Arabia? No. So all sorts kinds of countries. So that's in one sense it's an advantage because I look like a Philippine, I look like everything. Even if I say Italian, Spaniard, so yeah, it depends how you dress. Just my leave my hair longer and I look like an indigenous. So one sense that's good. Also reach Western countries like Europe, for example, sending missionaries from these countries to Europe and to the UK. Are you familiar, for example, they say that the evangelical population in England is low. For example, if you compare in the north of England, it's around of 0.5%. In the south, it is said that it's around of 1%. But in London, the evangelical population is around of 9%, which is quite high. And so why in London, in big cities, especially in London, there is such a difference between the percentage of evangelicals? Well, several reasons. One of them is that London receives a lot of missionaries, a lot of immigrants. So that helps to improve the percentage. Lots of Caribbeans, Africans, South Koreans, and also pastors from South Korea working mainly among South Koreans, but also with English. So this makes the percentage of believers higher. So sending a lot of missionaries to traditional Western countries like France, etc. So a huge possibility on that. And developing of theology, like new theologians, pastors, preachers, etc. Yeah, I have pointed out some good stuff about sending missionaries from Latin America. Our culture, we are really friendly, adaptable, great ethnicity variety. Migrants, there are a lot of migrants from Latin America and the whole world. People usually like culture, like sport, food, etc. Suffering because we were born in the middle of persecution. We are relatively cheaper than missionaries from the U.S. Or other countries. We cost less and do pretty much the same job. We don't need secure. We don't need big cars and things like that. So it's easier needs. And this is what I would like to work in the future. Is there one or two questions about this before in theological education? So I have talked 40 minutes just to get to me. Sorry. There are two needs basically in Peru. There is need for high theological education, Bible college, etc. And there is a need for layman. I don't mean layman here. I mean pastor with no theological training or no education at all. So what is the need in terms of academic education? Focus it mainly in the main cities, people that have academic background, that have high academic needs. These people are used to read untraditional methods and writing essays, etc., and they have access to books and library. So because I was born and raised in the city, I'm used to Western methods of education. So I was brought, I grew up writing essays, reading books. I have access to big libraries. A lot of my fellows are bilingual. They can read in English. You cannot get a BA if you are not able to read in English, for example, in Peru, so you need to read in English. You have all different kind of tools and education. So it's a different kind of people that is I'm aiming to reach. Laymen or pastors. These are pastors in the Andes and jungle. Mainly in the provinces and shantytown, they have non-academic background. Most of them have only primary school, basic or no theological training at all. People are not used to read, but listening, people are not used to traditional methods of education, and almost zero access to books and libraries. So it's a two different kind of people, two different kind of areas, and two different kind of needs. So we have to have that in mind when we go to these countries a huge mistake. We'll assume that the needs, the potential are the same, and therefore the methods are the same. And that's usually a mistake made by some missionaries, that they don't know the context very well. Well, I mentioned already this, the changes in theological education and how to change the methodology in theological education. I'm going to... this is what I would like to do. Just straightforward. I have talked too much, and I just plan to talk 1 hour. So this is what I would like to do in the next 18 months. Creating an initial and integrative platform. So my life, my aim, is to reach these two kind of people, pastors, in my whole life, not only in Peru, but in South America, at least at this stage, and perhaps in the future in Africa and Asia, with the aim of sending missionaries to the whole world. So that's my life. I began to work in this when I was 19. So I have been working in this project now for 10 years, almost. And I will spend the next 50 years working in this. So in the next 18 months, I would like to develop a platform able to reach both sectors, trained and non-trained pastors. This platform has to be cheap, accessible, flexible, which integrates education with contextualized methodologies of education. Cheap, everyone could have access to this, accessible in different ways, through the internet, through radio, through books, in different platforms. Flexible. So if someone is in the city, could have access to theological education through an app, in his iPad. If he's in the Andes, the same class through radio. If he's in the jungle, the same class through a book. The different, same class in different platforms, in different ways to get to these people. A platform easy to apply in different contexts and countries. If we apply the same in Peru, we can apply the same in Chile. We can apply the same in Colombia, the same in Venezuela, the same in different countries, even in Brazil. God willing, I will learn Portuguese next year to be able to communicate to Brazilians. Biblicaltraining.org, that's one idea. I have made a contact with two organizations. One is Thermillenia. Thermillenia provides classes in different platforms for pastors. It's a class of systematic theology, basically, but not only systematic theology, doctrine, pastoral staff, prophets, Old Testament, New Testament. It's a whole Bible college, but the classes are in video. It's not a recording. It's a video like Discovery Channel or National Geographic, this kind of interaction. And also, the same class is in video, the same class is in audio, the same class is in transcript, so you can get to all of them easily. And Biblical Training is run by Bill Mouse. And basically, he has collected the best lectures and the best classes of systematic theology, church history, etc., and Bible college in the world, but it's in English. So I would like to translate all of this into Spanish and put it into different formats. Actually, I will not translate all of this, obviously. I just need to make the contacts and people willing to do so. Well, God's willing, I will start a MTH, a Master in Historical Theology, at the John Owen Center, which is a branch of the Westminster Theological Seminary, Philadelphia. God's willing, I will start in July next year. I'm planning to go back to Peru in October, last week this year. I'm going back to the UK in June 2014 for 6 months to finish the master. So now, what I would like to go back to Peru to do that, to develop the network. I already have made a connection with a radio in the Andes that works in partnership with The Voice, HSBC. I have worked in this place in the Andes, so I would like to go there to extend a network and provide theological education in audio, which at the moment, as far as I know, there is no theological education by audio. So that is one project. Also, I'm interested in developing networks in high theological education, so I would like to visit Colombia and Cuba. One of my best friends is the principal of La Habana Theological Seminary in Cuba. He was studying at the John Owen Center, and we become really good friends last year. So he has invited me to go. God willing, I will go to La Habana to gain some experience there and see the needs and just getting my head around. And also in Colombia, I was talking with Grace Baptist Mission. As you know, I will become a missionary from UFM, but also I would like to work with Grace Baptist Mission in partnership, and Grace Baptist Mission have a missionary in Medellin, Colombia. They are top one level in theological education. He has a PhD from Cambridge University. He's probably 40 years older than me or 30 years older than me, so a lot more knowledge and a lot more experience in high theological education in South America, probably the top one in Spanish. So I would like to go there to gain experience. Well, obviously, getting better at Greek, Hebrew, and Latin. I began to learn Latin 6 months ago. I hope to finish Latin by the end of the year, and next year, starting learning Portuguese. That's a bit crazy. Oh, yeah, that's the finish. This is my last verse. And part of my motivation. After this, I look, and there was an enormous crowd. No one could count. All the people. They were from every race, tribe, nation, and language. And they stood in front of the throne and of the Lamb, dressed in white robes, and holding palm branches in their hands. They call out in a loud voice, "Salvation comes from our God, who sits on the throne, and from the Lamb." And the angels stood round the throne, the elders and the four living creatures. Then they threw themselves face downwards in front of the throne and worshipped God, saying, "Amen. Praise, glory, wisdom, thanksgiving, honor, power and might belong to our God forever and ever." It's not just Peru. It's not just Latin America. It's just one life. And I think that that is a dream of God, that people from every race, tribe, and nation may worship Him. And that has been my dream since I was a teenager. Used to pray and pray, God may allow me to see before I die the earth covering by your glory, and I will do all that is in my hand every day to get to that. And since I was 18, 19, I have developing this every day with this in mind. And the Lord has been good. I mean, I will never dream with coming to England. Learning English has been impossible, and it's still very difficult. But that is part of what I would like to do for the glory of God and for reaching countries with a lot of missionaries from South America to other countries in the world. And, well, that is what I would like to do and what I invite you to join, because it's not just my dream, it's God's dream, and I will never be able to do that alone, never, but all of us could do that. God is going to reach every country, every nation, every tribe there. The question is He going to use you? Is He going to use you while you are still alive? Is He going to use me? I'm going to live perhaps only 40 more years. 40 more years, and then I will go. And you too. Let's make the best of that 40 years duty or 20 for his sake, for his glory, for his purpose.